big week 7 Sunday recap here for you today. I talk about Sunday Night Football off the top, what I care and don't care about coming out of that game. Russell Wilson made the Steelers offense better. Davante Adams, did it really move the needle for the New York Jets? Didn't look like that to me. Then Andy Behrens hops on the show to recap two of the biggest games from Sunday, Lions, Vikings, Packers, Texans, and then a lot of mess after that. Oh boy, another very interesting Sunday to get into. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Monday, October 21st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. As you all know, here on the Sunday Recap Show, we start with a little solo recap of the Sunday night game before Andy Behrens and I dive into the rest of the Sunday slate. So let's get it started here with Steelers 37, Jets 15. Let's talk about what I care about from this game, which is on the Steelers side of things. Look, I'll admit it. Russell Wilson upgraded the Steelers quarterback situation. I was definitely highly skeptical of what Russell would bring to the table as the Steelers starting quarterback. You know, I think there are people out there that are higher on Justin Fields than I am. A lot of fantasy people. He gets really overrated in that side of things. He's also, I mean, he is a gem of a dude. I've met Justin before. Great guy. Super down to earth. Humble. The whole thing. So I think people really want to root for him. You know, team record aside, I do think pulling Fields and just kind of seeing what you had in Russell Wilson was a totally defensible decision, because I think he was leaving several dimensions on he was leaving those on the table. He was not making those plays for the Steelers offense. You know, he even said as much when he was asked about the decision to start Russell Wilson this week. I just wasn't sure if like the current version of Russell Wilson coming off a statistically fraudulent 2023 season with the Denver Broncos. If you listen to the show, you know how I feel about that. I've talked about it a lot. I just didn't know if he was going to be the guy to fill in the gaps. You know, one game in, I feel pretty good about Wilson actually filling those gaps in. You know, we saw him make quick decisions, just kind of execute the offense. I tweeted about this during the game. I love him just dumping off like four passes in the flat to big, giant human being Darnell Washington. Why not? That guy is literally a house. There are all those plays where he's just wide open in the flat. You know, again, four catches for 36 yards. You're not going to write a freaking book about that, but it does move the offense down the field, yards after catch opportunities. But really, where Wilson kind of activated the core concepts in Arthur Smith's offense was in the play action game. And I think this was the biggest difference between Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. These play action shot throws that are just, again, the key concepts of what Arthur Smith wants to do. Russell Wilson, according to Next Gen Stats, went 8 of 9 for 150 yards on play action throws on Sunday Night Football. That was the most, and this is outrageous, but that was the most yards on play action in a game by a Steelers quarterback in the Next Gen Stats era, which goes all the way back to 2016. That is pretty crazy that Russell Wilson in his first game, more yards on play action than any other Steelers quarterback since 2016. According to Pro Football Focus, Justin Fields actually got worse on play action dropbacks compared to non-play action dropbacks. He only averaged 5.2 yards per attempt in weeks 1 to 6. So that was just a lot being left on the table for the Steelers offense. If you're trying to be this team where you're running the football efficiently, you're taking shots on play action, you need to be able to do this. If you can't do this, you are in fact leaving things on the table. And that's where we were with Justin Fields. And Wilson, to his credit, veteran quarterback, been doing this thing for years. He was able to drop right in and make the most of those plays. You know, why does Fields not do that when Wilson can? Some guys just don't love turning their back to the defense. Some guys take that extra half a beat when they flip back around to see the whole picture, and that extra half a beat can send the whole play to hell. Again, I will give Wilson a lot of credit where he just sat in there, executed things, saw things quickly, and was still aggressive while doing it, which I think brings me to my next point, which is Wilson, is a really good stylistic fit with George Pickens. All of George Pickens' production came on outside the numbers targets in week 7. He did not catch his lone target between the numbers. That is the George Pickens game. You guys know this. I talk about it all the time. Pickens is a specific type of vertical X receiver. He is not a consistent player short and underneath, but where he really cooks is down the field on outside the numbers targets, out routes, corner routes, go routes, fades, things like that. That does line up well with Fields. Talked about this. He is a guy that plays well in that area, but I think Wilson throws, and they talk about a lot on the broadcast, the like just moonshots, the deep balls. He throws a better fade route and go route. And again, that is where Pickens really, really cooks. It's actually not that surprising because, I mean, George Pickens is basically the better version of Courtland Sutton, and Sutton enjoyed a strong season with Russell last year in Denver. Their connection, I think, just makes sense to me. So while it does kind of stink, Fields didn't necessarily do anything to lose the job. Everyone in Pittsburgh really sang his praises, you know. Even Russell Wilson in the postgame interview put some shine on Fields for just getting them to this position. The fact they're now 5-2 is a big part of that. We might even see Fields again. I'm not sure that Russell Wilson's going to hang on to this job forever, but one game in, I'm definitely ready to admit that a lot of my skepticism about Russell Wilson seems wrong, and he was just a straight up upgrade for the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. I think going forward, like, I feel a little bit better about George Pickens. I didn't know how to feel about him going to this matchup. I feel much better coming out of this one. He saved my ass in one league where I lost Brandon Ayuk today. So shout out to George Pickens, that's for sure. Look, I think we feel better about Pickens. We feel better about basically everybody in this offense based on what we got from Russell Wilson. We'll see how long it lasts, but that's how I feel about that one coming out of it. On the Jets side of things, I mean, talk about something I feel like I got right. My analysis on the Davante Adams trade, and I've said it a lot on the show, is that Davante Adams is not going to come in here and save the Jets. He's going to make them better. It's objectively better to have Davante Adams out on the field, even if he only had, you know, 9 targets and, 30 yards on 3 catches. Not like a statistically great outing. He played basically the entire game, was out there from the word go, the first snap, and you could definitely feel the space that Adams' presence kind of created for other players on the roster, right? Breece Hall had all this space underneath. Garrett Wilson had more single coverage opportunities. Alan Lazard made a couple of big plays over the middle of the field. I don't want to say that doesn't matter. Like, it does make a difference to your offense. The problem is the offense was still middling. They scored 15 points. According to Steve Palazzolo, who you know used to work for PFF, does the podcast with the 33rd team now, through 7 games, the 2023 Jets were 4-3. They averaged 18 points per game. Through 2024, through 7 games, Jets are 2-5, 18.3 points per game. It just, like, this team has the sins of this offense, the problems. They run so much deeper than anything Davante Adams can heal. The offensive line is an issue. They give up quick pressure that just torpedoes plays before they even begin. Breece Hall, like, a fantasy season, is back on track for sure. 103 yards on the ground or through the air today. That's great. 9 targets, tied with Garrett Wilson and Davante Adams for the team lead. That's awesome. But the run game sucks. It's still a really bad run game. And outside of designed, scripted deep shots, Aaron Rodgers, this quarterback, can only really run quick game. We didn't even talk about, like, the design flaws of this offense. That just is what it is. Adams made the Jets offense better. That's great. But it's not enough to matter. It's not enough to really move the needle for this offense. And this team is in a tough spot now. I mean, at 2-5, the odds that they're going to be a playoff team are long, you know? This is from producer Colin. Of the 163 instances of a club being 2-5 after 7 games since 1990, just 10 of those teams have made the postseason. So it's like basically a 6% chance. That's where that's where the Jets are looking at right now. Great. Great. All of this for what? All of this for what? I don't know. I feel slightly better from just a pure bottom line fantasy perspective. I feel a little bit better about the Jets offense, even if they lost this game, but still 15 points, that we're talking about. That's what all these headlines were about all week long. 15 freaking points. Patriots next week, Texans, Cardinals, Colts before the week 12 bye. There's going to be some spots where I think this offense looks really, really good and they thump on some bad defenses, but good teams, I think, will consistently and continue to give them problems. And that's just where we're at with the New York Jets. All right. That's your Sunday Night Football recap. With that, we could toss to the rest of the show with Andy Behrens, where we break down the games that you care the most about, the games you should sort of care about, and the games that could have been an email. Let's get into it. Joining the show now, as he always does here on Sunday, is my good friend, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Good football day. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. The Bears couldn't hurt me. Not that they've been hurting me recently. It's just a great, great fall day to settle back and watch some actual good teams face each other. We had several matchups today that were that in any other week would have been far and away like the marquee game of the day. It was really fun.
Oh, we had some absolute bangers. Most of the games that we were really excited about delivered, especially the first two that we'll talk about in the 1 p.m. window. I will say, though, Andy, we have, how do I want to put this? Not how I put it in the pre-show discussion, that's for sure. But I think I'll say we have a lot of variance in the games that we need to discuss here, because there were some delightful performances by certain NFL teams, and there were some pathetic performances by a handful of other quote NFL teams. So we'll get into all of it as we do here every week on the recap show. We break the games into three categories: games we care most about, games we sort of care about, and games that could have been an email. And we had some real email energy kind of throughout this rundown of games here. So it was a little interesting for me to sort it this week. Andy, if you feel I slighted anyone or maybe elevated someone too high out of the email category, please feel free to tell me, because again, it was difficult in this particular week.
Actually, this is one of those where, as I look at the rundown right now, this is like when you go through your fantasy ranks, like in the preseason, and you just feel like there's really like two or three tiers of difference between like the guys up here and the guys that are right behind them, right? Like it's like that. I mean, I don't know. It feels like there should be other categories of game between the ones that we're going to lead with and the ones in the second block here, because they're just not even close. I mean, the best games this week were outstanding. And as you say, like the marquee games that featured the best teams, they all sort of paid the fantasy bills, and they were all really fun watches. But then it very quickly took a turn.
Yeah, in the second section in particular, the games we sort of care about, sort of is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that particular section. But let's waste no more time. Let's talk about the good games here. Let's talk about the games that we really care about this week, starting with Lions 31, Vikings 29. This game was awesome, Andy. It definitely got main screen treatment. Really enjoyed it back to front. We got a lot of signature performances by a lot of players. I'm just curious, kind of your overall, take this anywhere. I got a lot of thoughts here, but you take this anywhere that you want to go here, because I think we can go kind of either side. We can go multiple different players here. What stood out most to you from this NFC North divisional matchup, where the Lions now at 5-1 are in first place in a very, very strong division?
Really a lot to enjoy here. Kind of a coin flip game, obviously. And the Vikings were driving late with a chance at a long field goal. Really, really fun. I guess the first thing I'll point out is that Jared Goff went 22 of 25. Jared Goff came into this week leading the NFL in yards per attempt. He was 8.9 yards per attempt. And I feel like we're pretty quickly going to get to the point where, like, all the arguments that existed last year for Brock Purdy as MVP based on efficiency, man, they're gonna apply to Jared Goff. And I know it's a great system. I know we like Ben Johnson. I know we like all these receivers. He's driving this thing, and he's been hyper efficient, almost flawless today. Just a ridiculous performance today. Like, these numbers are silly. Some of the throws were great. This isn't just like, Jared Goff throwing 5 yards downfield or anything like that. Like, there's some real throws and some impressive throws in this offense. So I thought Goff was outstanding. Great game from Jahmyr Gibbs, of course. David Montgomery, like, looked at one point like, oh man, we're going to lose David Montgomery for a month. Mm-hmm. Like, limped off the field with an injury and came back. He remains one of the most shockingly durable players in the game. Like, when David Montgomery gets hurt and has a multi-week injury, he's always been on the, like, on the early side of it. You know, impressive by him, even in a game that wasn't particularly good by his standards statistically. Just this was a blast. The Lions were also, you know, there are a couple teams that did it today. Philly did it on fourth down, fourth and short. But we saw the, you know, we saw the Lions do one of my favorite things on like a third and short, fourth and short situation, which is just to take a shot downfield. Because it's when you get like the best numbers situations. I don't know. It is regrettable for me that the Lions are actually a rival of my Bears and they are a divisional opponent because, man, it's really hard not to like this team. I find them immensely enjoyable. And the Vikings, maybe a little conservative late in this game, but they answered the bell as well. Aaron Jones played through injury, came back and was great. Sam Darnold was really good in this one, made some throws. Justin Jefferson was Justin Jefferson, you know. Addison had a couple moments. This is just a great game. And these are two teams that could, you know, on a neutral site, they'd over 100 games, they'd probably split them 50-50.
Yeah, hard to feel too bad coming out of this one if you're the Minnesota Vikings, even if, you know, you got your weekly Sam Darnold turnover. That is just going to happen at this point. But I think this really is a big game for Goff. I'm glad you went to him first. A couple notes from Next Gen Stats on Jared Goff. Goff was blitzed on 55.2% of his dropbacks in week 7. He was under pressure for a season high 51.7% of his dropbacks, and yet answer after answer after answer from Jared Goff. He completed 13 of 15 passes, 163 yards, and 2 touchdowns against the blitz. When he was under pressure, he completed all but one of his passes. Right now, coming out of week 7, again, according to Next Gen Stats, Goff's 11.6 yards per attempt and 71.6% completion percentage when under pressure both lead the NFL. Oof. Andy, what's the book on Jared Goff? It's okay. Yep. He can execute the system and, you know, but a good defensive game plan, you know, we've seen this defensive coordinator give Goff a hard time. We've seen other great defensive coordinators across the NFL put Jared Goff in a blender. I mean, I get that untying Jared Goff from Ben Johnson, from the offensive system is naughty, but like, what's the job of being an NFL quarterback? It's executing the assignment. Yes. And Goff executes his assignment right now better than almost any other quarterback across the NFL. I get that they have good players around him. I get that he's in a great situation, but what he's doing right now, this hyper efficiency is, as you said, is just so impressive. And it's you know, he's thrown to 7 different guys in this game. You know, it's not these little Mickey Mouse kind of stuff when he's under pressure. He is legitimately pushing the ball down the field into the teeth of this ferocious Vikings secondary, which again has shut down the Texans, you know, given the Packers hell, given Brock Purdy and the 49ers all that they can handle. Just such an impressive game, both, of course, by Ben Johnson, the whole Lions offense, but also Jared Goff himself, who I get that, like, a lot of NFL pundits want to just call him like a scheme merchant or, you know, cog in the machine at best. But like, the guy's a really, really damn good quarterback. And when he's on and feeling it like he was in this one, I mean, he can put up numbers with the best of them.
Yeah, I mean, I will again say that if you were making the argument for Brock Purdy last year, it all applies to Jared Goff this year. And there's just, you just can't look back at NFL history. You certainly can't look back at recent history and separate. Like, it's always a collaboration. It's always a collaboration between quarterback and coaching staff. And nobody gets it done without great receivers. Okay, Patrick Mahomes is currently getting it done without great receivers, but nobody generally gets it done without great receivers, right? Like, it's really, I mean, it doesn't happen, you know, like, you can't think about Drew Brees without Sean Payton. You can't, you know, you can't really think about Brady without Belichick. You can't, like, there's always a collaboration at some level. You can't think about Mahomes without Reed. Like, it's just, I don't know. You can't really fully separate any great quarterback from his surroundings. But this is, I mean, this is just a brilliant season underway for Jared Goff, whether he's actually an MVP candidate or not. I don't really care. I'm a fantasy guy. What do I care who wins these awards? But sure. This is by far the most impressive that Jared Goff has yet been in the NFL. He's just absolutely, he was stellar today. I also, this is kind of weird because the Vikings scored 29 points, but I feel like, you know, you would have been panicked as a Lions fan without Hutchinson the rest of the way. And they're okay. The Vikings are a real test, right? Like the Vikings came into this thing averaging about 28 points per game. They scored 29, but like, you know, it didn't all fall apart without your best pass rusher.
David Montgomery, like you mentioned, he left this game. He also had a fumble late in this one that looked like, I mean, he was going to eat himself alive for it and could have cost them the game. But, you know, the Lions end up pulling it out. Jahmyr Gibbs plays just under 59% of the snaps. And, you know, this was kind of a reminder of if anything ever happens to one of these guys, because Montgomery did miss a good stretch of this. And yeah. Gibbs immediately rips off like a bunch of big plays. Just a reminder that if one of these guys ever exits the backfield, the other one is going to, I don't know, maybe launch himself to like the RB1 overall conversation, because both these guys are damn good at football and this is a great offensive ecosystem. You know, other just fantasy notes on the Lions, like the Sam Laporta stuff. I don't know if you want to give a state of the Sam Laporta address. I don't know if we're going to have to put him in the coping corner, but he does have two targets, just one catch for 25 yards. And Jameson Williams, you know, he has literally one target minus 4 yards on the only reception of the day. There is going to be volatility with Jameson Williams. That just is the deal. It is what it is. You know, I saw a lot of kind of stats going around about how his numbers were really good when Goff was blitzed this year. But, like, you could also say that about Amon-Ra St. Brown throughout the course of the Jared Goff era. So I still feel like St. Brown is definitely the biggest circle of trust player in the passing game. And everyone else is kind of like ancillary players around him.
Yeah. I mean, if you've enjoyed this Jameson Williams season to this point and you were in on him in the preseason, you 100% do not get to complain that you finally had a quiet day. Like there is a wide receiver. There's always going to be the occasional quiet day. He's been a huge win to this point. So no complaints allowed there. We talked about it on Fantasy Football Live in the morning. I think especially now that he's gotten healthier, I actually think that Sam Laporta is playing just fine. And there are so many options in this offense, and they've been so good when they get like the run game for this team has been so good when they get inside the 10 yard line that like the area where he was really thriving and piling up fantasy points last year, they don't need to look his way necessarily. But if you just want to look at like where he's lining up, what, you know, route percentage, any of it, separation on his targets, that it all looks fine. When you watch a little All-22 and you see, is Sam Laporta open? Yes, Sam Laporta is open, but like they're going downfield a little more and they got a lot of dudes. I don't know what to tell you. I still think that Laporta is going to have I still think he's going to have a few days. Like he's a good player. He was an incredible, you know, I have seen a little bit of like some fantasy guys sort of rewriting the scouting profile on Laporta as if he wasn't anything coming out of college. And he was like a yards after catch miracle worker in college. He was a very good college player who was tied to a quarterback who was very much not a good college player.
Pull the hoodie up, Andy, just so people watching on YouTube can see.
I've got the Iowa gear on today. Like,
just a reminder.
It was
this guy's, you know, an expert in the field.
Yeah, Sam Laporta giving you like 600 yards within the context of that Iowa offense was by far the most impressive performance by any tight end in those collegiate seasons. Like he is a really good player and he is still playing very well, I think. It's just this offense is loaded, is absolutely loaded. And you're going to see a lot of games when the ball just finds Amon-Ra and Jameson and the running backs. And hey, I think there's going to be a couple spots out there for Sam Laporta. But and listen, if you don't, you know, if you don't want to start him, that's okay. I can't stop you. It's your team. Make your choices. I do still think he's a really good player tied to a great offense.
Yeah, I mean, this game and the game against the Cardinals notwithstanding, Jameson Williams is like a focal point of this is a passing game right now. He's a big part of their plans going into every single week. So that's going to eat into Laporta. The fact that St. Brown, regardless, like under no circumstances, do I think St. Brown was ever going to get toppled from the top spot of the target pecking order here. That's a problem for Laporta. But then the fact that like this team's getting good play out of like Tim Patrick off the waiver wire. This team's getting... I mean, they always get like some decent games out of Khalif Raymond. Khalif Raymond was kind of the Diet Coke version of Jameson Williams before Jameson Williams was fully unleashed. So he had three catches and a touchdown on four targets today. So it's just always like these great offenses, you got to accept some level of volatility. It's very much like the old Kittle, like not Kittle this year, but how Kittle used to be, where it's just, hey, he's going to win you. I think there will be weeks where Sam Laporta, if you start him, wins you weeks, but you're also going to have to accept a lot of these like 25 yard type of games here. And and the end result is going to look better than the actual week to week journey. Anything else on the Vikings before we move off from this game?
No, fun game. Enjoyed it. In fact, we hit a point in the day where I just stopped, you know, I stopped paying any attention to red zone entirely. And I was just strictly on the Packers game and the Vikings Lions game.
Let's move to that Packers game. Packers 24, Texans 22. Andy, I want to actually start this game on the losing side here with Houston, who gets 86 passing yards out of CJ Stroud. Joe Mixon, man, I mean, Joe Mixon, what a different, like, we don't often talk about running backs as difference makers. Joe Mixon has indeed been a difference maker, like obviously outside of Stroud, who's the most important player on the offense. It goes probably like Stroud, Nico Collins, Joe Mixon, and then like a huge gap to how much everybody else matters here. But that, like, also the reason I say huge gap is because like nothing else has really worked on this team. I think Steph Diggs has been good this year. This was not his best game. 7 targets, 25 or 23 yards, or I should say not his most effective game. But a lot of that was just because the biggest problem for Houston right now, I do think, is the offensive line, Andy. Again, from Next Gen Stats, Stroud was under pressure on 48.3% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate of his career. And like I would say coming into this game that the Packers defense overall, and specifically the pass rush, was fine to below fine. Stroud is one of these quarterbacks, and I think the way that he has graduated this year from what he was as a rookie to who he is now is making plays under pressure. But he's had to be in a lot more of those situations than maybe I thought he was, which I think is the biggest hamper to this offense right now. In addition to when Joe Mixon's not out there, they obviously just cannot run the ball. When he's out there, he can go for 25 carries, 115 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, Mixon, super impressive. If he's a top 3, top 5 running back rest of season, not going to be any kind of surprise. He's playing, when he's right, he's a difference maker at running back. And there, as you say, there are not many of those. It's wild that Stroud, in a game in which he passed for only 86 yards, still impressed me at various points, right? Like he got sacked 4 times, but there are always moments where like almost every quarterback I've ever rooted for in my life is definitely getting sacked, and CJ Stroud is able to move away from it, even though he's not Jaden Daniels, he's not Lamar Jackson, but he can get out of a really thorny situation pretty well. Had at least one late game, you know, incredible third and long conversion. He plays well all the time, but he comes away from this with like just an absolute nothing burger in terms of fantasy. The biggest absence really was Tank Dell in this one. Yeah. After a very encouraging week 6 is the thing. He saw volume, scored a short touchdown a week ago. Sometimes you just try to tell yourself a story when a player finally shows up in the box score, but man, I thought some of that like ability to cut without slowing down was really there last week. Heck, I thought he looked fine on like kick returns in this one. But for Tank Dell to finish with 0 catches when he was desperately needed against a Packers defense. I mean, the Packers defense has just been kind of weird because they entered the week. I assume they're still there, but they entered the week leading the NFL in takeaways, without like really stopping anyone, you know, like they hadn't really until this game hadn't really like shut down a passing game. But they'd been very successful pulling the ball away. Here they get, you know, they don't get a pick from CJ Stroud, but they don't even allow him to reach triple digit yards.
Yeah. And Tank Dell ran around on 86% of the dropbacks according to True Media, which is number one tied with Stephon Diggs. And, you know, he was out there. It's not as if like, oh yeah, we really got a big shocking performance from Xavier Hutchinson or John Mechie. Like those guys are on the field, but they didn't make impacts either. So, I mean, like I said on the panic meter last week, like Tank Dell is definitely still not Tank Dell. I don't care what he did in the box score last week. And yeah, he's getting a little bit better step by step, but he's not all the way back. And I think that's been a consistent, we've never seen Houston at full strength this year. Even that great week 1 game against the Indianapolis Colts, like Tank Dell wasn't all the way Tank Dell. So I think the Houston Texans, like the idea of the Texans, we just haven't from the offseason. We haven't seen that fully expressed this year. I think we can still get there, but I think we need a few things, which is one, we need them all to be healthy. And two, I think we need this offensive line to play up to more of its reputation than what it's put on film this year. And I also like Bobby Slowik is definitely on my radar. I said this a lot in the offseason that I think Slowik got a little bit overrated over the course of last season. I get it. We want to establish the run. The run is important. The numbers tell you don't need a good run game to do play action, but this system has always held that it is the inverse of that. I get it, but I'm a little like enough already with the first down runs. Like, let's maybe have top five in the league quarterback be the central figure of the offense here.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. For like, as good as Joe Mixon looked, and he was awesome, any level of predictability in the NFL is a weakness, right? So I fully agree with that. Really impressed in a terrible game statistically. There were still, I don't know, it's a roundabout way of flattering CJ Stroud, but there were still plenty of moments that impressed me in a game where he just did not do anything in the box score.
Guy who did do something in the box score and won the game was Jordan Love. Three touchdowns. Yeah. He still threw two picks. I'm really enjoying the Brett Favre version of Jordan Love. He wore the Brett Favre jersey when he returned from the injury, and he has really been leaning into Brett Favre's style of play. I shamelessly do just love this kind of quarterback play where it's just pure effort, pure gas all the time. It leads to a bunch of different dudes getting the football. I think we are kind of at status quo in the receiver core where we don't really feel like there's any predictability there. Andy, you can tell me I'm wrong if you disagree with me, but I like the Packers offense. I really enjoy watching it, and I think they had some good moments against a Houston defense that's a tough out every week.
Yeah, last week I think it was 22 completions to like 9 different guys. This week it was 24 completions to 8 different guys. And like Romeo Dobbs was pretty loud in this one. He had 10 targets. He goes over 90 receiving yards. Is a good player, but that can certainly go away next week. there's just not, again, with the exception of Jaden Reed, who always manages to show up in some way, although that didn't really happen in this one. 2 catches, 10 yards. He more often than not is making some noise for us. But man, it's kind of spin the wheel. It works because Jordan Love is giving us 3 or 4 touchdown passes each week. Like, it's fine to start these guys. I'm not saying you can't start them, but we also can't, there's not... You'd like to think that there would be a clear hierarchy here and that we could just very simply, Jaden Reed is a wide receiver 1 and whoever, Christian Watson or Romeo Dobbs is a wide receiver 2 and this next guy is a wide receiver 3, and it's just not like that at all.
No, not like that at all. I feel like actually the receiver room was like kind of the meme of itself in the offseason, which was Dontavian Wicks is 4th in routes, but he's targeted on 35% of his routes. Of course, he gets in the end zone after basically everybody dropped him because he was kind of super questionable to even play in this game. But guy's a good player. He had a couple of really good moments in this game. Christian Watson, it's low volume. You kind of need him to hit on a big shot, but he has 15 air yards per target. The problem is he only had 2 targets in this game. Jaden Reed was out there a bunch, but we know he's going to be kind of boom bust. And then Romeo Dobbs is more involved than everybody thinks he should be or wants him to be. But like, Romeo Dobbs is a pretty good player. Enough already with like every fantasy analyst bagging on Romeo Dobbs. Guy's a pretty good wide receiver. Let's chill on the Romeo Dobbs hate. One thing I will note, again, according to True Media, Tucker Kraft ran a route on 100% of Jordan Love's dropbacks in this game. That is huge. Guy scored a touchdown. It was a sick touchdown throw.
It really was.
From Jordan Love. I get that he's going to have his up and down weeks. He only comes out of this with 33 yards. But, man, from a utilization standpoint, from just the offense that he's playing in, Kraft checks a lot of boxes you want in a tight end 1.
Yeah, for sure. And at a, in a season in which like there's Kittle and Bowers and then there's just kind of everybody else, Tucker Kraft is at least finding the end zone. And, you can complain that, some of these plays are too big. And if we remove them from the equation, what do we have? But, whatever. Like, he's tied to a quarterback who is throwing 3-4 touchdown passes per week, has been incredible at home. We can't sit Tucker Kraft at this point.
On to the next game here. Oh my God. Chiefs 28, 49ers 18. We'll talk about the game. Obviously, the big story coming out of this one is all of the injuries. Juju Smith-Schuster left very early with a hamstring injury that he came into this game with. Deebo Samuel came into this game with an illness. I think he played like 3 or 4 snaps in the first half. didn't do anything. Juwan Jennings didn't play in this game. It was Ricky Pearsall's first game ever. And then, Andy, I feel like almost every Sunday I miss the big injury. Like, it's just like my eyes just don't happen to be on the big injury. The one I'm squarely looking at, of course, had to be, and like saw it in real time.
Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk takes a shot to the knee. He's carted off. Looked really, 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 really bad. And Kyle Shanahan said after the game that they fear he, and I fear that he tore his ACL just by looking at that one. So, man, it has just been one thing after another for the San Francisco 49ers this year. And it's one of those things that seemed like it could be a season from hell in training camp with the all the contract nonsense with Ayuk and Williams and McCaffrey's injury, Pearsall getting shot. Just seemed like it could be one of those seasons, and it's just snowballed continually here into the regular season.
Yeah, brutal. Obviously, you know, just an illness for Debo, so we assume he comes back and is fine. Jennings, clearly not a season-threatening situation. So they have some guys. You know, getting Pearsall's feet wet was big. They're going to need him from here on out. Terrible situation for Ayuk. You could see from his initial reaction that this was going to be pretty serious. Again, yeah. We don't, like, at this moment, we don't have word, but it looked bad on the field. The hit was ugly. The announcer reaction was ugly. His reaction was pained, and it's probably not going to go well. Really unfortunate. It was a good day from another good day from Kittle. He keeps coming through week after week. The touchdown streak ended, but he still finishes with over 90 yards. Not a great day from Brock Purdy. Really good day from the Chiefs defense. But you know, they obviously like flummoxed Purdy. Didn't only sacked him once, but you know, had him pressured in some key moments here. So good game plan overall. But man, just an ugly situation in the Niners receiving core. And you wonder, we talked about this a little bit this morning on Fantasy Football Live as well, but like there's only so many veteran receivers who are presumably on the trade block or even kind of near the trade block right now. And now maybe the Niners are in on them too. The Chiefs are certainly in on them.
Yeah, the Chiefs will definitely be in on some veteran wide receivers, I think, but man, I don't know. 49ers, you do have some youth in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have youth with obviously Ricky Pearsall. Jacob Cowing catches 2 of 3 targets for 50 yards. He's a fourth or fifth round pick that people have been impressed with. He's has a role on special teams. So we'll see, man. I mean, Ronnie Bell is on this roster. Chris Conley's on this roster. I just feel like for a team that has a head coach that asks a lot of its wide receivers and has really high standards for his wide receiver play, you're just going to have to trust these rookies and try to figure it out. Obviously I think Debo will be back at some point, but yeah, Ayuk, that looked like a potential season ender, which is really just a shame. It's a 0% chance we're ever going to see the 49ers at full strength this year from an offensive standpoint, which again, just absolutely sucks. Cause you know, McCaffrey might be back at some point soon, but I don't know that we're going to get Ayuk for the rest of the season, which, hopefully Pearsall can get it done, but you know, obviously he looked like a rookie playing in his first game. He didn't even have a clean offseason either, even before getting shot. He was on and off the field, on and off the practice field at least.
I'll be interested to see. Again, presumably Christian McCaffrey comes back. I don't know when that's happening, but like when he does, I mean it's hard to just shelve Jordan Mason. He's been pretty great. I mean, he had a relatively quiet day today, but still some pretty impressive runs along the way. You wonder how often they can actually run McCaffrey. Who knows what state McCaffrey's going to be in when he comes back too, but you wonder how often they can actually run him out at receiver and leave Jordan Mason in the backfield a little bit, cuz they're just short on playmakers right now.
Speaking of short on playmakers, let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs here real quick, which, man, I mean, 22 carries for Kareem Hunt. He plays over 50% of the snaps. He runs over 50% of the routes. He's like the whole offense, along with Patrick Mahomes just pulling things out of nowhere. He had the longest run of his career, a 33-yarder in this one. You know, Brady just kept harping on like, hey, Tom Brady, obviously the announcer for this game.
Yeah.
He just kept harping on Tom. What an idiot. Tom Brady, ever heard of him? Shut up, Harmon. obviously, everyone knows what I'm talking about. The stupidest thing I've ever said on the podcast, which is saying something. But, you know, he just kept harping on, you got to find ways to win. You got to, you got to, You got to make it happen regardless of excuses. Everybody's got things going on. You got to make it work. And that is what the Kansas City Chiefs are right now. It's not particularly fun for fantasy football, but the Chiefs are 6-0. And I feel like unless, yeah, they swing a Diontae Johnson trade or something like that, which I will at least be keeping my eye on that. We'll talk about the Panthers later on and why I'm keeping my eye on that. It just feels like that this is what the Chiefs will be all year long.
Oh, man, I mean, it's a miracle, first of all, that they are 6-0 right now. The run that you were talking about with Patrick Mahomes, a 33-yard run, it took so long. This is not a fast human being, right? Like he's really fun to watch in the same way that like some NBA players, like he's like a Luka Doncic. There's just a handful of guys where like the game is going to be played at their speed, you know, and it doesn't actually come up in the NFL as often as it does in some other sports, but he is somehow one of those guys. There's like a weird time space thing that goes on when Patrick Mahomes is on the field, and there's always enough room for him to do the thing that he intends to do. It's crazy, like particularly as a rusher, just a wild game. Also, like the rushing touchdown that he had when they went, you know, shotgun from, you know, it was like fourth and goal. There's no doubt in my mind that he was going to run that into the end zone before the snap. It was just like a spread him out, and I'm sure that Patrick Mahomes is going to find the rushing lane here, even though it's going to take him forever to do it. Because again,
I mean, he drilled Malik Mustafa, the 49ers defender, on that one.
Hit a guy with a truck stick at the goal line, like absolutely crazy. Great, great play. Really fun. It's wild that they are undefeated, and yet it's also like, and that, man, the defense has been so good, and they were really good today in a hostile environment. But man, it is, I don't know how you can think that even at home, even if assuming home field advantage and all that, it's so difficult to imagine them getting to January and just beating three great teams with this supporting cast. I mean, it's not good. They lose Juju Smith-Schuster early in this one, but come on, we're just talking about Juju Smith-Schuster. This isn't some like superstar difference making receiver. Like if we can't afford to lose Juju, it's bad. Xavier Worthy, I don't know. This is kind of a classic rookie game there, because Mahomes did miss him on a deep shot, but then Worthy falls down on a route that becomes an interception. You know, both Mahomes' interceptions were kind of odd in their own way. One was a batted pass that the guy who batted it actually caught, an incredible play. And then Worthy just fell down on the other one. So I don't know. But like there's a fantasy guys are tripping all over themselves to find new ways to say bad things about Patrick Mahomes, but they're undefeated and he's still doing like one or two miraculous things each week. I get it if you don't want to start him. I totally get it, because there are no weapons here. You know, it's whatever Travis Kelce has left, and then whatever receiver they can, you know, like Mecole Hardman was fine today, but am I supposed to write Mecole Hardman as a pickup off a game in which he caught one pass for 17 yards? I can't, right? Like there's no receiver here I want. I don't know if they can, you know, there were some rumors on Sunday morning that like, maybe, you know, teams are calling on Cooper Kupp. But beyond that, like it's just DeAndre Hopkins, it's Diontae Johnson, but man, they gotta add something.
Yeah, they got to add something. Team high 8 targets for Xavier Worthy. He ran the most routes among the wide receivers, but it, like you mentioned, it just wasn't really happening. Some of it, like Mahomes misses him on that deep shot, but then, you know, you see so many times Worthy's just bullied around in the route, and it's just he's not like that. What they need him to be, he was not billed to be that guy coming into the NFL, probably ever, and certainly not as a rookie. So we'll see what the Chiefs do, but I agree with you. They certainly, it feels like we're just going to talk about the Chiefs need to trade a receiver, the Chiefs need to trade for a receiver, and then the trade deadline is going to come and go, and they're not going to they're not going to add anybody. I mean, maybe they add Christian Kirk. Like, does that really get your... does that really light your fire? I don't know about that. So we shall see. Let's take a break. Those are the three best games. Those are definitely the games we care about. Let's take a break, and then let's get to the games we sort of care about right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk Seahawks 34, Falcons 14. Pull back the curtain here, Andy. I almost had this one in games. Well, I actually had this one until about 5 minutes ago. Try to pace up the show here in the games that we really care about section. And you were quick to point out that it kind of does feel like it's in no man's land between games we really care about and games we sort of care about. And I don't know, you could tell me why you said that. When I look at the box score, it's like, man, this looks like the fantasy game we were promised. We're basically everybody you want to hit, you really want to hit. And, you know, some guys disappointing, this, that, and the other. But actually watching it, it was just one of those, a little bit of a Kirk meltdown game and in some key spots. And that was kind of the difference in it.
Yeah. Well, we're just a couple minutes away from talking about like the Browns and the Patriots. And I definitely think that this game was separate and apart from that. Right. So like it is in a tier between the top three games of the week and the rest of this, admittedly sort of messy schedule. I guess the place I want to start is that the running backs were good in this one. Like Kenneth Walker was so good. Bijan Robinson was a cartoon in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Bijan Robinson was like, imagine playing like tag with that guy. Just like an unbelievable, just incredible. Like his ability to cut and like maintain speed and what he's seeing must be different. So different from what so many other running backs see. He was really fun to watch. And then Kenneth Walker, all of a sudden with elite receiving ability, apparently, like he was the touchdown catch was crazy good. The rushing score was crazy good. I mean, these running backs like showed up. That was really fun to watch. And they kind of stole the show in this one. The big ongoing story that'll spill on into the end of the week is DK Metcalf's knee injury, which I did not see. I did not see it happen. I barely even knew about it until he was getting carted from the sideline to the locker room. So man, I hope he's okay, because that guy's played so well. He played so well in this game. Terrific touchdown catch in this one, caught a ball from JSN on a questionable decision by JSN to even throw it. That guy's having a heck of a season that has also had some near miss touchdowns. He could have a monster season in progress. So I really hope he's okay, because, he's been great, and he's obviously a key to what the Seahawks are doing this year.
Yeah. And this is a nice bounce back game for him after what was a shaky performance on the Thursday night game last week against the 49ers. So, yeah, I mean, DK has been much better than I probably anticipated this year. He's been easily their most important receiver. Like, Lockett is still fine, even if he's not the player that he was. And like JSN is literally just fine. Like, that's the best thing I can say about him is that he was kind of billed as if he had a bad rookie season. I thought that he was fine. You'd like to think he'd go from fine to good. I think he's still just a fine. I mean, he has 3 catches for 9 yards in this game. That's obviously not helping your fantasy team. But like as a football player, he's fine. He's not bad.
He's like fine on higher volume now. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I do think, you know, the meme where it's like the futuristic society and it's like society if whatever, you know, the meme I'm talking about. People love when I describe memes on the podcast. Like JSN is that if society, if nobody ever said Jaxon Smith-Njigba is better than Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave or was the best Ohio, because like I remember how hard I pushed back on that. It was like, he can be a good prospect, but like he's not better than Olave. He's not better than Wilson. He's not better than any of these guys. But all those guys said it because they wanted to get their dude, you know, they wanted to pump up their guy. Okay. Like, yeah, Garrett Wilson's like, yeah, Jaxon Smith-Njigba was better than me. I guarantee Garrett Wilson don't think that. I guarantee Chris Olave didn't think that. Whatever. Anyways, who cares? But those guys will have to take up bigger roles, and I'm not sure that they're capable. I'm not sure that they're capable of doing it, because they're just not as dynamic right now as DK Metcalf. So that would be problematic for the Seattle Seahawks offense. I know this is going to sound weird about a Falcons team that scored 14 points and got blown out here. But man, the Falcons offense can beat you in so many different ways. You know, like you mentioned, Bijan Robinson, I love how you described it. He was cartoonishly good in this game. He was just, it was absurd, some of the stuff that he was doing from just an angles perspective, like shooting out of these tiny little holes, like along the sideline, all kinds of crazy stuff. As a rusher, 21 carries, 103 yards and a touchdown. That's coming off a week of like him and Tyler Allgeier kind of battering the Panthers. Tyler Allgeier is completely on the shelf. You know, it's 2 weeks after they just thump the Bucks through the air with all these like Drake London power slot plays. London has a good game here, 6 for 63 and a touchdown on 8 targets. Kyle Pitts is involved too, but they weren't like the reasons that the Falcons were moving the ball. It's just weird because, again, this offense was disappointing. 14 points, not good enough. We don't need to see Michael Penix this year. That's not the plan. And we did see him for a pass in this game. But it's just when you walk, it's so hard to predict what the Falcons are going to do on a weekly basis because they can do so many things that, yeah, from a fantasy angle, that it, what a world. Of course, the Falcons offense is frustrating.
Yeah, it is truly wild, though, because like 3 weeks ago, Kirk Cousins 58 pass attempts or whatever it was. And then last week they just absolutely run it down your throat with two different guys who both go off. On Sunday, Bijan with a crazy game, you know, like tip of the, you know, quiet game overall from Atlanta, but tip of the cap to Drake London, who has gone from being, you know, this total up and down player tied to a terrible quarterback situation last year. And now, you'd be hard pressed to find a more consistent, great receiver in the game, right? He's just double digit targets and a touchdown pretty much every week. Even when it's not great for Kirk Cousins, he manages to get home. So great season underway for him.
Yeah. I mean, Drake London currently second in the NFL in receptions with 44 behind Brock Bowers. So my prediction there is looking up. God, Wandale Robinson. Jeez, God almighty, 43 catches. Update the graphic. How close are we to freaking Wandale Robinson, 100 catches? We're definitely on pace. 43 catches, 303 yards. That is disgusting.
That's gross. That is
horrendous. Yeah, put it up on the tracker. I'm sure on YouTube, Colin is showing it here. Okay, let's move on to the next game. Bengals 21, Browns 14. Obviously, the big story coming out of this one is Deshaun Watson. Looks like he tore his Achilles. Everybody expects it to be a season-ending injury. DTR played in this game because he was the number two quarterback. Jameis Winston, once DTR got hurt, Dorian Thompson-Robinson got in there as the emergency third quarterback. Look, obviously, the Watson era just continues to be a disaster, outright disaster, yeah, for the Cleveland Browns. And I don't know, Andy, everybody's been kind of living in this fantasy world of like, when Jameis Winston gets in here, what can he do with these wide receivers? Well, Amari Cooper's gone. Jerry Judy's the top target. He's doing Jerry Judy stuff on the field. Take that for what you will. And now we might not even get Jameis Winston as the starting quarterback here. So it doesn't, I don't know. Just it's just such a gross situation in Cleveland right now.
I assume that we're going to get Jameis Winston as the starting quarterback here. I mean, like, really, honestly, what Cleveland should do is kind of race to the bottom, right? I mean, this is a terrible thing to say about a team that has a $230 million quarterback or whatever the Watson deal is, but, like, they should race to the bottom and draft a quarterback because their current quarterback problem is not obviously not getting any better, and now Watson is going to be out for presumably, you know, obviously the rest of the season, maybe into next year. Didn't look good. I don't know. Is Jerry Jeudy their number one receiver? Because Cedric Tillman caught 8 balls for 81 yards in this one, got targeted 12 times, and seemed to be the guy who, like, if, you know, Amari Cooper's a really good player, so I always hate describing people as roles. But, you know, Tillman seemed to step into a bunch of those targets. I don't think so highly of Jerry Jeudy that I'm willing to assume that he's going to be the number one receiver. David Njoku is probably going to get peppered with targets the rest of the season. If they want to be watchable and competitive, it's probably got to be Jameis at quarterback. I don't know that that's the decision that they're going to make. Cause they should have, you know, I mean, we're seven weeks into the season. It's not going to go well for Cleveland. They should probably become, you know, they're already sellers. They might consider selling more than they already have. And, you know, they already have very little incentive to try to win games, honestly.
Yeah. Jerry Jeudy ran the most routes on the team. That's what I meant by, you know, number one receiver, yeah, for Jerry Jeudy, but Tillman was second among the wide receivers, actually second on the team, 82.1% of the routes, according to True Media. And you mentioned the 12 targets, and yeah, there's not an Amari Cooper role, but he is an X receiver. Cooper was the X receiver. So it made sense that as Cooper exits, Tillman gets elevated. Tillman is definitely an interesting prospect. So And like, I still think, you know, like all these guys are playable wide receivers, basically, is the way I look at it here in Cleveland. And I do think that now that Watson is officially out for the season, we will see them try to go back to more heavy personnel. You know, Elijah Moore only runs a route on just under 70% of the dropbacks. And like, Jordan Akins plays a lot in this game. Jeff Swaim plays a little bit as like the number two and three tight end. Like, I think they'll try to go back to that because Nick Chubb did get back here. Of course, he was not fully involved. That was not to be expected coming off his first game here, but he did touch the ball. He did carry the ball, 11 times. He also caught one pass on three targets. I think they'll probably try to ramp him up more and more, but yeah, I don't know what the Browns do, man. I mean, it's not like there's a surefire quarterback at, you know, at the top of the draft. And yeah, this is going to be a multi-year, we're trying to dig ourselves out of the hole here of the Deshaun Watson thing. But I think the smart thing to do would just be, hey, Jameis is not, I don't know if smart, but I think like Jameis is not the future of this team. Maybe Dorian Thompson-Robinson could be our 2025 starter. Let's see what he can do. I don't know that I have a lot of faith in that either, but this is the team that traded all those assets for Deshaun Watson and gave him a fully guaranteed contract. So they probably will not be doing the smart thing here. We'll talk more about, you know, Brown's fallout throughout the course of the week. And maybe if we're interested in any of these wide receivers, when we find out what their plans at quarterback are. Bengals side, anything of note here, Andy? This is kind of Bengals as usual.
Kind of Bengals as usual, but we did see it wasn't much of a game for Chase Brown, but pretty decisively out carried Zach Moss in this one. So I think his ascendance to being the running back that we probably care most about in Cincinnati is well underway. Another good game for T. Higgins. I mean, both T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase made some noise in this one. They were good. But Higgins is, I don't know, like, since Higgins has been healthy, the volume has basically been the same and the production has basically been the same. So they are certainly doing right by T. Higgins. Those two are just really, really good together.
Let's move on to the next game here, which is the London game. Jaguars 32, Patriots 16. Patriots got out to a 10-0 lead here, Andy, to start this game, and then the Jaguars just completely came back and kind of put this one away.
Yeah, if you started Tank Bigsby in this one, like, it seems pretty clear that Tank Bigsby needs a particular type of game flow, right? And when they got down by 10 points to start this game, you're like, it's not happening today, because they are not throwing to Tank Bigsby, right? Like, that is the formula for Dearness Johnson in the absence of Travis Etienne. But then they quickly righted things, and Bigsby ended up having a huge day, a couple of touchdowns. He's actually still, like, he's not so available that we get to write about him in the pickups column or anything like that, but he's still out there in about a third of Yahoo leagues. And I'm sure those are super casual leagues with very few players, but and few active players. But man, just check the wire, because he's actually out there in a few spots. Not a bad game from Lawrence, but I'm just not, like, overall, I'm not even super interested in anything on the Jacksonville side. I came into this one wanting to watch Drake May. And again, there were a few misses. You know, May's not hitting everything, but this is two games for him. He's gone over 500 passing yards over those 2 weeks, and he's got five touchdown passes. And you can see the rushing juice here. We don't have a huge rushing game from him yet, and maybe it's not coming. They got a couple of difficult matchups ahead, but when we get later in the season, they got a lot of friendly matchups that we can pick on too. And I just think, you know, there's a real path for Drake May rest of season to putting up like top 10, top 12 numbers at the position.
Yeah, absolutely possible. He didn't get a lot of help today from his supporting cast, which is going to happen, right? I mean, they got nothing from the running game with Ramondre Stevenson probably coming back a little early from a foot injury. DeMario Douglas, yeah, he has three targets in this game after a big game last week. He had an illness that kind of pushed him on and off the field in this game.
The first two targets of the game, and then he just disappeared.
Said he talked afterwards and said he basically felt worse and worse throughout the course of the game. So that was obviously disappointing. And then their rookie receiver, Jalen Polk, like, I've talked about it, that he's playing out of position. He's playing, you know, X receiver when he is. I mean, that guy never played X receiver at Washington. I don't know what he's doing playing the X receiver spot on this team. I get they don't have another candidate, but that just feels weird. It seems like he's even made comments to the fact that he doesn't love this. He was also kind of posting some weird stuff, cryptic stuff on Instagram after this game. But dude, make a play at the catch point, like catch the freaking ball. Like, yeah, I mean, what are we talking about here? 0-for-3 for Jalen Polk. And I never want to say it's, you know, over for a guy seven games into his career, but it's gone about as bad as you possibly could. It's actually very similar to like Jonathan Mingo in Carolina last year. It's like, okay, those guys were probably fine picks where they went. They walked into a wide open room, a lot of opportunity, played out of position, and it immediately looks like as bad as it possibly could. So we'll see what happens with Jalen Polk, but definitely he's not a happy camper, and the team cannot be very happy with him. I'm with you on the Tank Bigsby stuff. Worth noting, game script wise, they come back to the USA and they play the Packers, Eagles, Vikings, and Lions before their Week 11 bye, and they come back and play the Texans. I'm not sure how many other like Tank Bigsby games are in that stretch. So if you want to consider maybe him like a sell high candidate, he could potentially be there. Last night on the Jags, Brian Thomas Jr. rocks. I mean, that guy is such an outstanding player. And he has a lot of room to grow, which is really scary, too. So really good player that the Jags have there. Next game up, Bills 34, Titans 10. This game definitely, like both these next two games have very email energy. But I think there's at least a couple of interesting things to talk about here, which is one, the Bills. We get our insight into, you know, Amari Cooper's role here. He doesn't run very many routes. I think he only ran 12. I can pull it up right now, but I think he only ran 12 routes on the day. He ran fewer routes than Matt Collins, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman. Only runs around 34.3% of the dropbacks according to True Media, but targeted on 41.7% of those routes. There was clearly a time to, you know, get him the ball. There was a, you know, there was a whole priority there. That's only going to go up, and you immediately saw he was an impact player for this team.
Yeah, impact player. Great to see. This is now twice that Amari Cooper has been traded in season, and twice that he has scored a touchdown in his first game with his new team. Really impressive. There was a nice moment at the line of scrimmage immediately before Cooper's touchdown, which he scored out of the slot, where like he looks over and he's asking Keon Coleman a question. Like I'm sure it wasn't, you know, purely tell me what that audible means or tell me what I'm supposed to do on this play. I don't think it was that, but, Keon Coleman, who himself is entirely new to this offense, basically directing Amari Cooper, or answering a question for him immediately before the snap of the football. And then he scores a touchdown. So that was kind of fun. Keon Coleman, by the way, pretty good game.
Yeah.
And like, if you thought that Keon Coleman was like an automatic drop because the team added Amari Cooper, I don't think it was ever that easy. I was like, I don't know. My assumption was that this was really going to come out of the workload for Matt Collins. By the way, Matt Collins, like fine real life player. Good, like really good downfield blocking on that Ray Davis touchdown. Like, I don't know, Matt Collins is fine, but like, we're not going to see a whole lot of Matt Collins targets moving forward with Amari Cooper on the team. But like, they still like Keon Coleman, and Keon Coleman can still, you know, it's not going to be perfectly consistent, but he actually saw a season high 7 targets in the first game with Amari Cooper. So I don't think Coleman goes away. Allen obviously good in this one. James Cook comes back and he's not particularly efficient, but finds the end zone. That's good. Ray Davis finds the end zone. Ray Davis is a good player. Mm-hmm. And he kind of came into this week injured and still led the team in rushing. Looked really good on the rushing touchdown. He's just kind of a bowling ball of a human.
Yeah, that was super interesting. I think we need to see more and more of Ray Davis, obviously, when he's a little bit healthier. The email team in this game is the Titans. I mean, they jumped out to 10 points in the first quarter, in the first half. And then who cares? I mean, Mason Rudolph started the game. I don't care about that. Do you care about that, Andy? I mean, do we care about anything about the Tennessee Titans right now?
No, not really. Tony Pollard's having a really good year, but I don't know that it's really going to amount to anything. I mean, he entered the week leading all backs in yards after contact per attempt with like over 4 yards after contact. So he's been great, but I he's been great within the context of the 2024 Tennessee Titans, and it just doesn't mean a whole lot. There's not many points here.
Next game up here, Rams 20, Raiders 15. The Rams, we should talk about the fact that Cooper Kupp is probably back next week. That's great. Puka Nacua could be back at some point soon. You know, Kyron Williams, 21 carries, 2 touchdowns in this game. And I don't got much to say about the Raiders, Andy Behrens. Both quarterbacks appear in this game. Alexander Mattison is the entire offense. Alexander Mattison and Zamir White is just the latest example of, if the first nice thing you say about a running back is who else is on the team.
Yeah.
It's Alexander Mattison. Zamir White. Alexander Mattison gets 23 carries to 3 for Zamir White in this game. So
the funny thing is, Mattison has now been on both sides of that discussion.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Mattison has been the dead zone back. Yeah. 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 Brutal. Brock Bowers is going to finish this season with like 120 catches. There's not a lot, you know. We don't have a healthy Jacoby Myers, and Davante Adams is gone, and like, I don't know, Trey Tucker is fun, but not, you know, say he's not some prime NFL wideout. Brock Bowers is going to finish this year with like, I don't know what the number is going to be, 110, 115, 120. It's going to be a ton of catches.
Oh yeah, he's going to make my Drake London leads the NFL in catches prediction wrong, because he currently leads the NFL in catches.
Yeah.
It's Brock Bowers. I mean, Bowers is awesome, but that is like the one good thing the Raiders have going for them right now on offense. The Rams, like I said, I think McVay after the game said he expects to see Cooper Kupp this week, and they do play on Thursday Night Football this week, so that will be a welcome sight. All right, let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll talk about the games that could have been an email, and my God, there are some real email games in this particular section. We'll get to them right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, Commanders 40, Panthers 7. Jaden Daniels doesn't even play it, like barely at all in this game. He had a rib injury. Dan Quinn said they're going to get more updates tomorrow, so you might know more about this than we do as you're listening. I mean, the Panthers are not even an NFL team right now.
No, and Washington didn't really treat them like one either, right? Like, you could tell that Jaden Daniels probably wanted to stay in this game. He was frustrated. His mom, like, is tweeting that he's fine. Comes back, and he's, like, all smiles and street clothes on the sidelines. And the Commanders are just
the crowd.
Rolling. Yeah, like, this is the score that you might have expected with a healthy Jaden Daniels just lighting this team up. And like, Mariota was good, but, you know, it's... I will say, with the Panthers this season, it is often becoming difficult to separate like the quality of opponent from like the numbers that are being put up, because like, here's Marcus Mariota having like a near flawless game, right? Two touchdowns, no picks. They sack him one time, over 200 yards. Like, you know, kudos to him for being ready. But man, the Panthers are just offering no resistance. Chuba Hubbard got home in this one, and that was it. Andy Dalton was terrible. The first interception in particular, like on the little attempted check down that he absolutely launched, like just a brutal decision, brutal throw, terrible day for the Panthers. And then Bryce Young eventually enters this game and passes for negative 4 yards.
That was the most insult to injury analysis you've ever done there. Andy Behrens. Well, we might see more of Bryce Young, because I think at this point, what is the point of starting Andy Dalton? Like, the Panthers should, I thought, like, all right, they won't trade Deontay Johnson because he's too good. They might want him around for another, you know, the next quarterback that they bring in or whatever. But at this point, like, hey, you've got Xavier Leggett, this undrafted rookie Jalen Coker actually can kind of play a little bit. He only had one catch for 10 yards in this game. Who cares? But like, you might as well see what he's got as like a big power slot. You know, Adam Thielen will eventually be back, I guess. I don't know. You might as well trade Deontay Johnson, just activate Jonathan Brooks and run the ball 50 times every game and just try to literally run out the clock on the season, because there's really no other point to anything else going on in Carolina. I think we can successfully move on from this game and somehow maybe even get to an uglier game. Eagles 28, Giants 3. Just like every game that the Eagles play this year, I feel like, man, they didn't look that good. A lot of problems in this game. I mean, Jalen Hurts was getting, you know, taking a lot of sacks in this one early on, and they somehow just obliterate the team across from them, who is more embarrassing. Daniel Jones is such a weird quarterback, man, because he's fine unless you can pressure him. Then he's the worst. Then he's the worst quarterback in the NFL. And Andrew Thomas, their all-pro left tackle, is just suffered a season-ending injury. So I feel like we will see more of this version of Daniel Jones, where he goes 14 of 21 for 99 yards. We might even see more of Drew Lock, who also made a cameo in this one.
Yeah, Daniel Jones sacked 7 times, and I will say, a couple of them were just like, any quarterback in the league would have gotten sacked. And I don't know if anybody could could have got the ball out. He just had to turtle up and take the loss, right? Like that happened a couple times. This is going to be really bad moving forward, given the state of the offensive line. Not a lot of hope for the ground game either. Obviously a good performance by the Eagles defense, which I think most of us had expected. They were a pretty good streaming option, pretty popular ad coming into the week. Saquon, great game. I mentioned it earlier. My favorite play call of the day was I think it was 4th and 3 around midfield, where the Eagles just launched it deep to AJ Brown. I love those calls.
Yeah, that was sick.
Because it was a beautiful throw, and it's also like it's the one time where you were just guaranteed single coverage on a great player who can beat his man, right? Like it's just such a good situation in which to take a shot. Especially against this team of all teams, like who cares? We give the ball to the Giants at midfield, fine. Not a big deal. I loved that call. I like that kind of aggression. I thought that was great. Obviously, again, Saquon great. AJ Brown, such a difference maker.
Yep. I mean, I think that's who the Eagles will be this year. Unfortunately, you know, Devonta Smith, one catch for -2 yards in this one. I don't know. I don't really know how to feel about the Eagles, and it's not good. Basically, is my feeling. Yeah. Even if like some of their stars hit, Saquon's so incredible, AJ Brown is so incredible. It just feels like they come into every game with a little bit of a disadvantage because I don't really love the coaching staff. I don't really love the plan, but their stars are just too good, and that just kind of is what it is. I'm sure we'll get a lot of Malik Nabers talk in the people's panic meter, and we probably should, because I would be a little bit nervous if I have Malik Nabers. And you know, people were viewing him as like a runaway wide receiver one. I'm a little concerned with out Andrew Thomas, this entire offense starts to collapse. And again, Wandale Robinson had 9 targets, caught 6 passes for 23 yards, like he's, I don't know, a damn scat back or something. Just ridiculous football from Wandale Robinson here. But I that's going to be the Binky player of the offense when Daniel Jones is under pressure. So a little bit concerned about what
we
might
get. If we don't
have
time to get the ball downfield, it's all going to be at the line of scrimmage stuff to Wandale Robinson. Like this is the path for Wandale to finish with like 110 catches.
Yeah, like I think Malik Nabers is awesome, but he cannot magic the football to himself. He wasn't magicking the football to himself at the beginning of the year. They were getting functional quarterback play because the quarterback was protected. Now Daniel Jones is not protected. We've just seen that. We've just go back to the beginning of last year. It all completely falls apart from, nice. I hit my mic there. That's great stuff. It all just completely falls apart when Daniel Jones is pressured. Like this podcast is falling apart here. Speaking of falling apart, Colts 16, Dolphins 10. What is falling apart harder, Andy Behrens? This is how we'll set this game up. The Dolphins just, I don't know, everything. Or your faith in maybe ever starting a Colts receiver with Anthony Richardson under center?
I mean, you should just not be able to win a game. I mean, it's not like the Colts defense is
good
by the standards of the current NFL. You just should not be able to win a game where your quarterback goes 10 for 24 like this. And he was, of course, Richardson is fine on the ground and, you know, the usual caveats. I'm sure there's better days ahead for Anthony Richardson. But man, 10 of 24. And these are not all like super high degree of difficulty throws that we're asking from him in all situations either. So messy on that side. But then the Dolphins just basically no show this game. Tyler Huntley gets hurt, but like, come on, we're talking about Tyler Huntley getting hurt. We're not talking, you know, the loss of like, you know, difference making quarterback. They obviously need Tua back in the worst way. It may happen in week 8. It sounds like he's going to be back at practice this week with a good chance to return. And that's all you can hang your hat on if you've got any kind of investment in Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Like those guys barely touching the ball this week after, you know, you had some time to game plan this one. You could have figured other teams find a way to get the ball to their playmakers, even when the quarterback situation isn't perfect. And Miami just did not find enough ways to do it in this one. Tyreek Hill, looking at the box score now, he's got one rush attempt for 5 yards and one catch for 8. So on 2 targets. So that's what we got from like the NFL's most explosive playmaker in this one. It's just, you know, this is bad both ways.
Yeah. Producer Colin was talking about how, you know, I mentioned last week, Doug Peterson at the halftime of the London game just had that, like, I don't want to be here look. Mike McDaniel doesn't quite look like that, but I don't know how to describe him other than he just looks defeated out there is the best way I can say it, and which is super troubling. Like, you just can't completely, you can't go in the tank like this if you're Mike McDaniel, and you come out of the bye with no plan of like, all right, we're going to lean into Snoop Huntley's interesting, unique skill set. Like, no, they're just kind of trying to run the Tua offense until Tua gets back in week 8. And like, I don't, God knows, they didn't even look good with Tua out there to begin the season. So I'm very concerned about the Dolphins.
But like, you could have been 3-3 with your starting quarterback coming back. And then we can, like, I don't know, we can tell ourselves a story about how we get this team into the playoffs, right? But now you're 2-4 and you just lost the most, like, joyless, unfun game of the week.
Yeah. 2-4 are the Miami Dolphins. 4-3 are the Indianapolis Colts, and I definitely regret having any optimism. Like, okay, maybe Josh Downs can help Anthony Richardson with his accuracy and all this stuff. Richardson was under a ton of pressure, shout out to Miami in this game. But according to Next Gen Stats, so far this year, Anthony Richardson's 51.6 completion percentage when kept clean is the lowest among starting quarterbacks. I mean, by, this is me editorializing, a country mile. Trevor Lawrence is the second lowest with 64.3%. So, like, I mean, an outrageous gap from Richardson to Lawrence. So, I don't know. Look, Richardson hasn't even started like 10 NFL games yet. He certainly has not started and finished 10 NFL games yet because he doesn't make it through all of his games. You know, he's still out there like lowering the shoulder when he probably shouldn't. It's a developing picture with Richardson, but just like the reality of what it is right now is I don't think you could play anybody in this offense.
That's such a good, you know, it's a minor thing that I had filed away and then forgot to mention here. Like, Anthony Richardson still doing that, like still lowering the shoulder and trying to power through defensive backs, like on plays where he already has the first down, is crazy to me and just self-defeating.
Yeah. Well, self-defeating to anybody who spent more than, you know, a cursory glance at this game, which is all I gave it. So that is that is it. That is all the games we have here to talk about. And Andy, do you have any awards, any fantasy awards to hand out this week here in week 7?
I don't know if I have a name for this award, but I do have something that I want to mention to people. And I know it seems like a bit when I talk about kickers, and it is usually a bit when I talk about kickers. It's usually just, you know, let's have some fun, let's joke around. We do have a situation right now where Will Reichard has not missed yet this year. He has an absolutely, this is Minnesota's kicker, he's a rookie.
You should definitely say that.
Has not missed yet this year. He is tied to a team that is averaging like 28, 29 points per game. Has a huge leg. He hit a 57 yarder against the Lions that would have been good for I don't know, way longer than 57 yards, 67 maybe. And again, hasn't missed an extra point, hasn't missed a field goal. His team scores a million points. They've already played their bye, or they've already come through their bye, and he's like 10% rostered. Like, he, you know, if you play in a league with a kicker, I'm just telling you, Will Reichard should be like 99% rostered. He is whatever, all positions count in the end. He is clearly a top three kicker for the rest of the season. That's all I got.
Good on you, pal. Andy's kicker of the week. I actually didn't want to say this, but I will say it. You know, we talked about that team last week that has Nico Collins and CMC in a league that we're in together and is somehow surviving. The team also has Brandon Ayuk, though, so I don't know. Who cares? Colin asked me, who's like your hero on this team? I was like, well, number one, dumb luck. Number two, I was like, don't tell Andy, but it's probably Younghoe Koo, like the Falcons kicker. So, hey, sometimes your whole season can go to hell, all your players get hurt, and the kicker bails you out. So there. Okay, yep. Minute, you know, whatever it is on this podcast at this point. I've knocked my mic over. I've said the dumbest things I've possibly ever said. It's week 7, baby. We're talking kickers. This is where we're at.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, well, that's going to make Andy Behrens happy. I mean, he's repping Iowa, talking kickers. Let's let Andy go. He's done.
I wouldn't drop Brandon Aubrey for him, but almost anybody else will record.
I was going to say Aubrey on Fraud Watch as best kicker in the NFL. I mean, how many field goals did he make this week? Zero. How many?
No, but hey, man, we have an interesting conversation now about the number one kicker in dynasty formats. Is it Aubrey? Is it Record? I don't know.
I mean, you on the ancillary podcast on the secondary feed that you are launching. Stay tuned for that one. Andy will be breaking down kickers all year long. So definitely make sure you subscribe to that, with more details to come on that particular show. For this show, mercifully, it's going to do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow on Tuesday with Dalton Del Don. He's going to join me for the post week 7 People's Panic Meter. I mean, my God, there's got to be people panicking after what a messy, messy week this was. A lot of injuries, a lot of weird performances. We expect to hear from you. FantasyMailbag@yahoosports.com. You guys, the listeners, the beautiful people out there, you brought it last week. Bring it again this week. I want to hear what has you panic. You want to get a rant off about something? I don't even care. We'll do anything. It's a podcast. It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want. No, we can't. But we will try to hear from all of you, and we will try to get to all of your submissions. FantasyMailbag@yahoosports.com. Until then, we're out.